Hello and welcome to a new episode of Medicine Direct, the medicine podcast.
Sometimes all it takes is one wrong step, a tackle, a landing after a sprint, and suddenly everything comes to a standstill. The ankle joint buckles, a ligament tears, perhaps with a bony ligament tear. For the body, a complex process begins at this moment. Healing, load management, and the long road back to performance. But one crucial question arises again and again. Is it actually enough to be pain-free again, or does the real work only begin afterwards? Because between therapy and real resilience lies an area that is often underestimated. Athletic training. That's exactly what we're talking about. My guest is someone who specializes in exactly this moment, the point at which rehabilitation becomes movement, trust, and performance again. Matthias Blankenberg, athletic trainer, performance coach, and founder of MYOS, My Own Solution. His approach not only treats structures, but look at the whole person with a view to movement, nervous system, stress, and mindset. Together, we look at the path after a typical sports injury today. Hello, and welcome to Medicine Direct, the medicine podcast, and I'm incredibly happy because today we have a very, very special and a very great guest here, Matthias Blankenberg from the MYOS, athletic training, and much, much, much more. He will tell us more about it here in a moment, and I'll say first. Matthias, hello, nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation today.
Matthias, many people think of physio when they think of rehab. Why does the decisive part often only begin afterwards in athletic training?
Yes, I'll say, the first part of the rehab is of course, after acute injuries, to look at the structure, to treat the structure, and the goal is to get people moving again as quickly as possible and then to let the reconditioning, I like to call it, take place.
Matthias, now you've already told us a few things that I find really very, very exciting and really very good. Now pick us up at exactly this point. How did that start for you? How did you actually come up with the idea? It's actually only been the case for a few years now that you do this on athletic training?
So athletic training sounds like high performance. It is. But of course we don't just have high performance athletes. We also have patients of everyday life, and for me they are not only people of everyday life, but also athletes of everyday life. Everyone has their own profile of demands and requirements in everyday life, and so for us, the difference between what we do with people is of course very, very big. We differentiate very clearly, but the claim to work with people is the same, the same goal, namely to put movement in the foreground and also to walk through life without complaints and healthily.
Matthias, why does the decisive part often start afterwards in athletic training?
Well, I'll say, the whole process up to the point in time when we fully integrate someone back into everyday life, i.e. with full performance, and that can be the athlete, but it can also be someone who simply experiences normal everyday life. That's where it is decided whether everything that has been put before with all the interventions has also led to where you would like to have him or her. And, I think that's a very, very decisive moment, because, when full performance is required and you still have any restrictions or any restrictions that limit the whole thing, then you're at a point where you just have to yourself, did everything that took place before then go as it should have?
Now I come to it with such a small critical question on the side. Is this area in the system underestimated?
You mean that the rehab, the first phase of rehab, is it underestimated? I don't know if you can say that in such a general way. So I think the claim is the same, both on patient side and on the therapist side, that the goal is to completely reintegrate someone back into their everyday routines. That is the basic claim. I think the underestimation lies in the fact that people are judged too much on the structural level and too much on function, the structure, and too little on the person himself. And this includes many other factors, such as compliance, mental attitude, how does someone feel in such rehab? Of course, this is not a linear course, not a linear ascending course, but it is wave-like. There are, and you have to discuss that with the person. And I think that's where the gap is widening. I think that includes empathy, the ability to listen well and, yes, just get involved with people. I think that's a very, very important skill that you...
I think so too, and I'm definitely very grateful to you in advance for the answer from you, which you described really great. Above all, very honest, also with the empathy that a therapist simply has, really great. Now we talked a bit in advance, said, which area are we going into so that we can take people with us? And we said a bit, we'll give the example of an athlete, a footballer, with an ankle injury, with a possibly bony ligament tear, which is an injury in professional football or professional sports, but also in amateur sports and quite normally, when going for a walk.
Image.
For the audio listeners, we've described it a bit now. For the video viewers, they see it in the video. Here we have it with, take us with you. What is the starting point for such an injury? In other words, injury patterns, restrictions, risks.
Well, the first,
The first point for me personally is always, when I, a patient or a player in the case who comes to our practice, the first moment for me is always, how does the player get in the door? Who is that? How does he get in the door? What are his habits? What does it radiate? For me, that's actually where the part of the examination or the anamnesis begins, because I can see relatively quickly who I'm dealing with and how I can then start a conversation with him/her. And the anamnesis is the first important factor for, let's say, the status quo admission and then also in advance, for the clinical examination. But it clearly defines how I assess someone and how I then talk to someone and how I work with someone. That's a very important aspect.
Yes, now we have a full professional with you. Indeed, at what point does rehab become real training? And if you could perhaps explain to our listeners again beforehand, what do you understand as rehab in your field and then as real training?
So for me, the claim is to get someone who comes with an injury back on the move very quickly. And I think you have to differentiate again. It is important for people to get moved. Training then includes various aspects of the content structure and structure. But for me, the claim is to someone who has suffered something as quickly as possible. Hey, it's in claim in an, quotation marks, as far as this ankle injury is concerned. Just the foot and you have enough structures that lie above it that also have an influence on this little system. But we can start very early on to load up here again and functionally give something back into the system. Of that, yes, so that you get back on your feet faster. That is point one. And also to play along with this mental component. You don't have to wait until it somehow feels like you can do something again down there, but I show you as a therapist, exactly what you need and that can start again very, very early.
Thank you very much for explaining it so well. I think that's a bit understandable for everyone.
Wow. Of course you don't want to offend anyone too much, but I think that the biggest difference is that physiotherapy often, takes place too long on the bench, that you think small for too long and, don't exhaust enough of the possibilities that you want to, actually.
And I think that's where the biggest difference lies, and that's a very important aspect, for me, but also for my team and for the concept of MAYOS, that we're developing individuality and also MAYOS, IEMYOS, is also called my own solution, that we develop individuality and approaches to solutions that can be developed on an individual basis.
And at an early stage, as I just mentioned, exercise can take place again. I think that's what makes the biggest difference.
Now I come around the corner with the next critical question. Is this transition often made to...
Yes, I believe that, both therapists and those who are affected, don't trust themselves enough in such phases and maybe, get stuck in phases for too long. There are so-called phase models and rehabilitation processes, which are tied to times, i.e. days, weeks after operations or even conservative care. And I think you have to get away from that of relying only on time, because there are also functional schemes and you can, judge functions, and I think that's where it diverges a bit. Sometimes it doesn't quite fit into the time frame, and then you may be a bit earlier than you think you can be. And that's why it's important for me that we assess functions and also the compliance of the person who is doing it. It varies a lot. Some are earlier because they push a lot. Some are a little later because they don't really dare yet. And I think this interaction and communication with the person is extremely important.
I think so too, and I would also like to say right away that exactly this transition that we have just talked about is, I think, also very, very important, that the patient also says what he wants and how he wants it and that he also participates, because you can't.
100%.
You can't lay your hand on it and then everything will be great again, but there is always a patient story involved. Let's move on to the next phase, load management. That's a very, very important point. How do you control the load specifically by feeling or with data? Because that is now also very much associated with data. Can you...
At the end of the day, it makes sense to both. On the one hand, of course, we record various parameters at certain points and these can be force parameters, these can be joint angles, ranges of motion, these can be side comparisons. We also liked instrumental diagnostics to collect certain data that we can refer to, but data is not everything. So, and that's where it's important to look, what's that? What's the feedback from the person? And that can vary from day to day. I had already said earlier, such a rehab process is also a wave movement. No, that's sometimes better, that's sometimes worse, and that's why every day is actually a very small new anamnesis for me. When the person comes in the door, the first thing is always, how are you today? How do you feel? What did you take away from yesterday? Are you feeling better? Are you feeling worse? And that's where I'm starting anew. Yes. Not to overshoot the mark, not to wait too much, but to always hit the sweet spot that is optimal for the moment.
So our listeners can already see that there are many, many small pieces of the puzzle, but they have to mesh so that such training and, especially in this phase of load management, that everything works perfectly. Now let's get into the performance buildup. When does the buildup to the actual performance begin?
I can't delineate it so clearly.
For me, an athlete with an ankle injury, who of course has extremely high demands on himself, back to what he actually does as quickly as possible. And that's why I have to start this path with someone very, very clearly from the outset, and the demand for performance increase or performance development or reacquisition, whatever you want to call it. And everything I do with the person from the first moment should serve to regain performance or improve it. And that's why it's for me, there's not that one moment for me where this cut is there and I say, okay, now let's start with the performance, but you also perform as well as possible within the scope of your possibilities with the injury and the highest level at which I want you to be.
I wished for exactly this answer, Matthias, and I am also very, very grateful to you for it. What do many people miss when they are finished in quote?
What do most people miss when they're done? Yes, so I think, so this one, we have the moment when we've treated someone or led them back through this process, this transfer back to the club. And no, yes, where do I stand now? What happens if I come back to the club now? For example, what do they do to me? What can I trust myself to? For this, it is important that we bear the responsibility for ensuring that there is a good handover, and that the departments and the clubs also ensure that it continues seamlessly, and ensure that the self-confidence and confidence of the athlete continues to be promoted, that he or she is physically and physically, mentally is always at the same point. Do you understand what I mean? So that there is a balance, that he doesn't feel physically better than he is mentally, because he may not really yet, but he could. But just as the other way around, that he doesn't feel mentally stronger than his body actually allows, because these are always the moments where it can then come, even to recurrences.
This is very well addressed. I think it's a very, very important topic, and I'm also glad that in the last few months and years, more and more is coming. Just because you have also addressed the topic of professional athletes, no matter in which area now, whether it's football, athletics, handball, tennis, or anything else, something is that they also say, yes, so I'm healthy, or I'm fine now. I'm back from all the physics, I'm recovered from athletics, but my head isn't ready yet. That's a very, very important point about this whole thing. How far is the head? We have, so the therapy was faster than the head can actually process? That's a very, very important point, where we'll certainly go into more detail on one or the other episode. Now, thank God, you've made the transition very, very easy for me. We called the next steps a bit of professional sport as a laboratory. A professional sport is like a high-performance laboratory, actually. What, let's say, can the normal patient, who does not perform professionally in a club or in his area, which he carries out athletically, learn from exactly these patients?
The normal patient of the professional I think the normal patient, because he may not be exposed to the same thing on a physical level, but mentally he can. Yes. I think there is the possibility the normal patient can also learn from the professional, and there are great podcasts, and there are also great interviews from athletes who carry their mindset to the outside world, how they can experience such rehab phases or such extreme phases from the very top. And I think you can learn a lot there, and mindset moves the biggest.
Matthias, thank you very much for that, for the answer. Now we come to you in particular.
MHM.
You have a very special approach, you could say now. You could also call it individual, very structured. Why are you convinced of your approach? And take us a little bit into your approach again, so summarized what we have already addressed again and again.
Why am I convinced of my approach? If I didn't have that, if I didn't have the power of persuasion in what I'm doing, I don't think I would be authentic. That's why I believe very much in what I do. And over time, of course, it has also become apparent that the people we work with come to us with the same conviction, either because they have heard it from someone else or have experienced the same thing that others have already experienced with us, and thus with conviction again. So, that's one thing. What makes our approach special? I think, that it is important to think far outside the box and not only look at structures or the injured areas, but to look holistically at the person and to consider all aspects that can have an influence on an injury or on the physical system. The teeth are extremely important in the context of inflammation in the body, influence on the nervous system, influence on statics and all that. If you take all this on board in your ways of looking at things, is an absolute added value in the approach, and then also in dealing with people. And it makes more than sense from my point of view, to look and think 360.
Absolutely. I thought the approach was just quite good, or the description quite good with the teeth. There are actually currently German national players who have also had their wisdom teeth extracted, because the injury phases were simply too often, were too frequent, and actually showed that it has become less. I find it very interesting that you also address this again here. Then you just said something. The change over time, how you built the whole thing. What has changed for you over the years?
So you gain experience over the years, and I'm now, I would call myself, an old hand. The time I've had now too, gain experience, work with people, mentor athletes, on, highest high, lowest low. I think that, the experience of having the experience with someone, accomplishing something together or building something is the best and most important thing you can have. No textbook can do that. Oh. But I also had a moment, where I changed my perspective in dealing with the body very much, and that was the point when I realized that this biomechanical, and this working with muscle structure and chains and so on, that this is not enough, but that there is. Other aspects also play a role, and that is the nervous system. And there's an institute, in America, C-Health, which is very much focused on the nervous system, on brain areas, on peripheral nerves, on the central nervous system. So it goes very much into neuroanatomy and neurofunctionality, which are very, very related to it and make the connections between physical performance and the nervous system, and from the moment I got to grips with it, and that's really an extremely complex and versatile way to deal with the matter. It's not easy to things, but from that moment on, my mindset has clearly changed in how I look at things, how I approach them, and how much our nervous system has an influence on our movement and our environment.
Absolutely. You can also, if you, and I would recommend this, follow your social media channel, then you can always see what changes there. So this, you can't say that in general terms, this and that has changed over the years, if you observe it a bit. Now you have also communicated again. Two devices fly out, a new one comes in. That's how it changes, and I think that's also the, this key to the whole thing. Move with the time. Not too extremely, not too much device, so mechanics, data and so on, but also body feel. And finding this middle ground is very, very crucial, and I think that, actually makes it very, very special for you. What are typical training mistakes where you say, what do people do wrong in training?
Do you mean in the cooperation of the therapists with the patients or the trainees themselves?
The trainees themselves. So if we look at jogging, for example, stability, strength base,
MHM.
I think that many people are either not familiar enough with how they move and where they move, or overestimate themselves.
So basically I think it's right that exercise is an elixir of life for all of us. Now it just depends on what environment do I move in, what do I do in sports, and what physical requirements do I have, and what can I contribute to doing what I do in a healthy way. And as you say, you often see people walking and without having a trained eye, I can judge, a bit amateurish, whether it looks good or not. And that starts with footwear, it continues with personal skills. So what does the knee do? What does the hip do? What does the upper body do? And I think that there is a lot of potential to guide people a bit and show them and say, hey, there are a few things that could be changed by external influences, possibly by inserts or other tools. But especially, and I think that's much, much more important to people, the movement, to coach them, to guide them so that they have a better understanding of what they do and how they do it.
Can you take us in for a moment? How do you train confidence in the body?
That's definitely a thing. You don't learn that. It's not in any textbook. It's like this. I always say, either you have it or you don't. Either you have it more or you have it less. I believe that you have to have a feeling and antennae for work with someone, how to talk to someone, how to pick someone up. And getting or regaining confidence in the body happens to me through a lot of communication. I constantly ask in training, how do you feel about her? How do you feel about what we're doing right now? I depend a lot on feedback, and then I notice or get feedback that it feels good or it doesn't feel good yet. Can I be progressive? Do I have to be regressive? I experience and look very, very closely, and I think I now have a very trained eye for how someone does something. Does he radiate a sense of security in what he does? Doesn't he radiate it? Does he want more? Does he want less? I think it's very, very important that at a certain point in time, you go back to the injury and confront people again with what actually happened there. In trauma management take place. Can I look at what I had a player from the Austrian league, he tore his cruciate ligament and couldn't look at what happened until he was with us. And I think that's a very important part of rehabilitation, that you not only heal physically, but also heal mentally to get the full performance back.
Thank you very much for taking us with you and all. Let's get back to our ankle for a moment. How would you treat an ankle joint? I don't know, a torn ligament, whatever. Why are certain exercises important, and what exactly do you train?
MHM. Well, it's, wow, such a process has been a long time, of course. So it always depends on the severity of the injury, on the structure involved, on what happens in the body then. I mean, at the beginning there is the phase of immobilization. This means that we have swelling, we have redness, heat is generated. So we have everything in the structure that leads to the body being signaled first. Hey, something just happened down there that shouldn't have happened. Of course, the whole thing is preceded by pain, is triggered by our nervous system in principle, pain processing, and then the interventions to be started. In the beginning, you can't do much with the structure. First of all, that's the law. In the beginning, it's all about relieving the structure, reducing the swelling, letting the inflammatory process that is there take place for the time being. That's important. I experience it again and again that people work with cold, and a lot of cold is applied to logically reduce pain. But of course that also has an influence on the inflammatory process, and we need these inflammatory mediators take place down there. That's why I have to be careful. But of course I can go through structures above it. If it's the ankle joint, then there's very, very much little underneath it. But I can work on other structures that lead to the fact that I can use my foot again more quickly, to get into a normal gang to come back, yes. The gait is very, very important at the beginning. It is part of this to then carry out gentle mobilizations within the scope of the available possibilities, slowly bring the movement back again, passively, actively, and muscularly again. And I can tell you for at least an hour now about how I would go about tackling such a structure, but the most important thing, and I keep coming back to it, is that you convey to the person, hey, it's really not nice what you have there, but you can do a lot, prepare yourself for it and your foot for it, kick back into the load fast. One last sentence on this. We have a really great piece of equipment, which is an anti-gravity treadmill. And I can put people with an acute injury back in there very early, take away gravity, totally relieve the body and slowly start to walk, feel, develop dynamics, and then also convey to the person, hey, it is, I can. Yes, I can move. I'm already walking again. Of course, that does a lot to you mentally.
Absolutely. You can also see that this is now being used more and more often at the centers that have it at all. Most of the time, the investment costs are so high that not even all football clubs actually have them. I think it's great, and I'm definitely grateful to you for taking us along this way. Now we have a system, i.e. a health system and reality. Is there actually room for good athletic training in our healthcare system?
It's not that easy. I mean, our healthcare system provides support, especially in moments when people are sick. So, an illness means I go to the doctor, I get a prescription, I go to physio training therapy and then get therapy. I think it's important that we understand from our mindset, that prevention is the much more sensible way to do things to prevent injuries. That's the basic approach. I think that people only invest intensively in their health when the child has already fallen into the well. So, and I think there has to be a change, that you proactively take care of it, also financially, that is simply part of finding ways to put your health preventively on a foundation with which I can carry out my everyday life or my sporting activity in a way that works well for as long as possible. And I think that so, in terms of our healthcare system, already an aspect, where I see weaknesses in the system, on the system side, but also see weaknesses in the individual, how to actually approach health.
Matthias, thank you very much for the open words and that you also carried it out that way and also showed it at the same time. Okay, there may be a problem in the system, but this problem can be solved and find a solution for that. I think it's great. Now we have our category. Let's ask the professional, towards the end, three things you would give to every injured person about training.
Every injured person. Okay. So first of all, my first recommendation is, face the situation with full acceptance and don't look backwards, but look forward. That's the most important thing, I think. The second is, invite in people who will support you in coming back in the best possible way. And these are not only therapists, but also the environment in which you move, family, friends, children, etc. That gives incredible strength. And if you're already back, then do everything you can, sure that what happened to you doesn't happen again if possible, and make sure that you put your body on the pillars in the best possible way on your own responsibility, independently and with your own routines, in order to be able to. Those are the three things I see.
Matthias, thank you very much for the really valuable tips and for the great description too. And in the end, I say thank you very much for being a guest at Medizin Direct today.
With pleasure.
I can only recommend to everyone, take a look at the website, check out the Instagram page. You can find everything in the show notes too. And if you liked the episode, then leave us a like, 5 stars and so on, and say thank you very much for being a guest here today.
I thank you too. Thank you. That was Medizin Direct, the medical podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and were able to take something away for yourself, we would be happy if you subscribe to the podcast or recommend it to others. You can also find more content, short explanations and insights behind the scenes on our social media channels, Instagram, TikTok and other platforms. Thank you for listening and see you in the next episode.